This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening and welcome to The Informer. Dean Beck with you this evening. Just an hour after its official launch at the Australian Sexual Health Conference being conducted in Adelaide, we'll take a look at technology that is changing the way people who are positive look after themselves. And we'll catch up with the new chair of Victoria's Pride Centre, and we'll find out what's going on with that little thing. Just an hour or so ago, the world's very first app to manage the health and well-being of people living with HIV was launched. It's my great honour to be an ambassador for this particular app. It's called My Life Plus. Joining us to discuss My Life Plus is Bill Patterson. He works for NAPWHA and was part of the consultation process to put this app together. Bill, thank you very much for making yourself available.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Bill, why is it that you think this tool is so important?
I think it's important because it's an indication of really how the modern person with a chronic illness manages their illness. They use all the tools that are available to them. Clearly, in today's world, information technology and web-based resources are tools that are available to everybody. I think it's important that we've got a resource that's based in that space to help us manage our well-being better.
This was done in consultation with community, and I guess NAPWHA is a reflection of the positive community anyway. Tell me what happened during that consultation process to get the app to where it is at this point.
We had several meetings that I was involved in, but the first meeting was very profound. What we had in the group were really representatives of all of the priority populations of people with HIV. So that is women, gay men, there were people from who'd been HIV positive for decades like myself, and then there were other people who were newly diagnosed. And so just the variety of people around the table was really heartening to see from the company, from people who were wanting to develop the app. And then something really significant happened. Sarah, who was coordinating the development of the app, put the kind of, oh, this is what it's going to look like when it opens up. And, oh, I think the first screen was, what's your T-cell count, or have you taken your pills today, or something like that. And almost to a person around the table, we said, oh, you know, for those of us who've been HIV for a while, the taking of the pills is important, but really what's more important is how we feel, how our life is going. And from that moment on, the idea that this was something which was based in the medicine of HIV versus something which was based in the lived experience of people with HIV, that distinction was made very clear and primacy was given to the lived experience. So now, when you open the app, now in its final form, you have, how are you feeling today?
Which is a lovely opening line. I mean, it really is. And it gives you the opportunity to tap straight into that journal and answer that question.
Well, not only that, at the bottom of the page, so part of the app is a series of articles that NAPWHA has given the app developers put on, kind of as resources for people who download the app. And so the first two articles that appear at the bottom of that, how are you feeling today, are one on mindfulness and the other, which the title is How to Live to 100. And I don't know if they planned it that way, but when I opened it up for the first time, I thought, you know, that's gorgeous.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what those of us who are living with HIV need. That's what we care about most of all. Living a long time, living well and feeling great.
Now, there are lots of practical tools in there.
I have three medications that I take, but one of those is the HIV pill. And I just have that registered to push notify me at 8 o'clock every night, have I taken it. So I'm using two systems at the moment, the doorstep box and the push notifications. But I think when I get to the end of this batch of pills, I'm going to try just the push notifications because I kind of like that, not having that other piece of paraphernalia kicking around for me.
And you can also keep all of your doctor's appointments in there. It's a full wellness management tool, isn't it?
Yeah, and the relationship with your doctor's staff, I think, is really useful because as time goes on with managing our HIV, the appointments with our doctors are going to get further and further apart. because the management is getting better and the requirements to see doctors are, you know, are getting less and less and less. Well, that's going to mean that we forget stuff, I think, that we want to, you know, raise and say, well, a couple of months ago, you know, this happened and, you know, or I had a terrible rash or I, you know, and I thought it went away, but I thought I would tell you about, you know, and we forget those things.
Yeah, well, and sometimes you go through a down patch and it's not when you've got to see your doctor and you don't worry about troubling the doctor just for feeling a bit flat. But if you can stick it in there and it starts to become a pattern, you can remind yourself that, you know, this perhaps isn't quite right.
Yes. And the app lets you flag different entries to remind you, you know, because then you can pull up your flagged entries and just hand it to your doctor. It's there rather than you going, oh, well, a month ago I felt bad and I don't know how long. And they'll say, oh, how long did it happen? Were there any triggers? Was there anything else going on at the time? You think, well, I don't really remember. The app gives you the capacity to enter all that stuff in. And then it becomes pretty clear, both to you and then to your doctor when you're telling them about this stuff, if it truly is significant in the long term or if it was just significant at the time. It just augments that lived experience so that you can share it with your healthcare practitioner, really.
Now, I have no doubt that the minute you speak of pharmaceutical companies, people start thinking, well, what about my data? Who's getting access to that? NAPWHA has been very specific, in, as has the pharmaceutical company, in making sure that the information is yours and yours alone.
Yeah, there was a bit of discussion around that because, you know, what happens when something goes up onto the cloud and all of that. But nothing goes up onto the cloud. It's all on your phone.
So if you lose your phone, you're stuffed.
Yeah, but the only people who can get that information are the people who have your password or have your password in your phone. I think that's a compromise they made, and I suspect and I hope that they will, in the next incarnations, and hopefully will be further incarnations of the app, that will become more sophisticated in how to store that stuff and also how to share it with our practitioners. At the moment, the app allows you to create reports that you can send, but it would be nice if we could send it in real time and then, you know, the doctor collected it at their surgery or, you know, whatever. Or they could send us result stuff and then it could go down. But the privacy stuff, I think in the first instance, they wanted to be able to address anybody's concern about where that information would go. And the only way to do that was to make sure it just stayed on people's devices.
I think it's going to change people's lives and really help them manage their well-being for many, many years to come. Bill Peterson, thank you very much for joining us on the program today.
You're very welcome. And I'm very proud too, because anything which is going to help us to have better lives in the decades that go on, I think is a good thing.
One person who has been using the app of late is Campbell Clarkson. He joins us now.
Thanks for having me.
You are a young fellow. Why are you using the My Life Plus app?
I'm living with HIV. I was diagnosed back in 2014 in late December. I've decided to start using the app just to get an understanding of having everything in one place. So for me, there's tons of different apps for pill reminders and not really anything to track my CD4 count or anything like that.
There's little bits and pieces everywhere, I've noticed, but nothing that brings it all together in one.
No, so having a look at the app, it's sort of a really well-polished, easy-to-use sort of app. There's obviously not everything on there that I'm going to be using, like some of the, I guess, the wellness sort of things. I think being 25... not yet. But like small things like pill reminders, like it's just great to have there. Like I've got my calendar, and it's not as easy to use as what a pill reminder is, so it's good having it in the app.
Did you find it a challenge to set up initially, or was it easy to set up as well?
There's a bit of a reading at the start to do with the privacy stuff, just to make sure you know that the content's been stored on the device.
Yeah, I went through that too.
Yeah, so like it's just going through that. It's a bit daunting seeing that, but I guess every sort of app has it.
But at the end of the day, when I went through it's the same or less than every other app that we use. In fact, it doesn't mind, you know, your photos and other things like some of them do.
Yeah, no, it was fairly straightforward. So hit accept and went through.
Have you used it in conjunction with a visit to the doctor yet?
I have, yeah. Yeah? So for my most recent checkup, I put in the reminder for the doctors as well as then the results. And I actually can remember my CD4 count and results from when I seroconverted. So putting that in there compared to where I'm at now.
Well, at my last visit, got my doctor to do me a printout of all of my viral loads and CD4 counts so that I could backfill it and keep it up to date from then on.
Yeah, it's such a crazy thing to look at from where I was at, you know, 350, if not less, CD4 to now in the 1100s. So it's it's huge, just like it's a big change.
So that must make you feel mentally a lot better as well, knowing that your levels are where they are and having that to check in on must make you feel much better.
Yeah, I think for me it's the consistency. I've read on paper, you know, medication can be is totally consistent. But actually seeing that they're not worrying about, you know, I had a big weekend, the weekend before, is that going to affect my results, all this sort of stuff. And like having colds and flus, I've been to the doctors and got my test done when I had quite a serious man flu, and it had no effect on my results. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, it sounds like it's all working for you.
Yeah, it's something that I'm keeping on in my pocket and keeping seeing what's going on with it.
Excellent. Thank you very much for joining us to chat about MyLife Plus.
Thanks for having me.
And to find out more about the app, head to mylifeplus.com.au. Up next, we're talking to Jude Munro, the chair of Victoria's Future Pride Centre. Last Sunday, the Age newspaper revealed that the former CEO of Brisbane City Council, Jude Munro, was to be the chair of Victoria's new Pride Centre. I caught up with Jude yesterday and asked just what have the board been doing until now?
One of the things I've been instrumental in doing with my colleagues is making sure that within our first 3 months of operating, so we've really technically been a board since October the 18th, is in these first few weeks is to draw up a plan for how we can get all of our governance policies in place, all of our systems, whether it's expense allowances or the board charter, whatever it is, the full suite in place by the end of this calendar year. There's not too many boards that hit the ground running to that extent. I just think it's really important, given all the strategic issues we're going to have to deal with, that we, you know, get that governance framework in place.
There's a hell of a lot riding on this, you know.
I'm absolutely aware of it. I talk about the Pride Centre becoming the pride and joy of our community.
Careful who you say that to. We would love it, absolutely.
Well, I think it's such a delightful word, joy, and as is pride. And I think the growth of the joy organisation with, 400 volunteers, what I find remarkable, those 44 years ago, there was only really two or three organisations in Victoria, and now we've got over 50. I mean, that's just absolutely remarkable.
And they're all well patronised and much loved. But getting them all on the same page, that's got to be difficult.
Yes, but not impossible. Yeah. And do we want everybody on the same page in any case? I think we just, as a board, discussed our values last night. And one of them was valuing our difference and celebrating our difference, being inclusive of our diversity and celebrating our history and culture, and that planning and creating our future. You know, I think these are really important values for us, that sense of pride and strength and celebration. There are those without that would try and undo those things, but I think there's a fundamental strength that's there, because partly based on that it's not easy for people, even now, still not easy for people coming out or people going through transformations with the fluidity of our gender and fluidity of our sexuality. I think, you know, these are not easy things, and I think it builds inner strength in people, which translates into a strength in our community. And anything we can do in the Pride Centre to further build that, I think, will be important.
Some would argue it's defeating the purpose of absolute equality. I mean, whether that absolute equality could ever be achieved. I think there's still a cultural relevance for a Pride Centre, regardless.
Oh, I think so. We've got diversity within our community. Celebrating our difference and us appreciating each other's difference within our community is, you know, I'm not going to say it's a challenge, but I think it deepens our own understandings of ourselves if we can understand each other and work with each other and support each other.
Joy recently had its license renewed and changed from being, after 22 years, the gay and lesbian radio station here in Australia to being the LGBTI radio station. That's an example of the evolution that our community is going through. Is the Pride Centre going to be something that can be flexible enough to accommodate such changes in culture?
I think that's a really important question you've asked, Dean. We are clear that there will be further evolutions. Our constitution allows for that. So the annual general meeting will be able to vote on other aspects of the alphabet coming into LGBTI in the future. So I think that's a very important point that you've made.
We're speaking with Jude Munro, who is the chair of the Victorian Pride Centre, as it is proposed. Where are we at, Jude? Where are we at with the Pride Centre?
Oh, what a good question. Well, we've got a board, and I've gone through the fact we're establishing our governance policies, but we've had a workshop involving a number of what will be, we hope, the major tenants, including Joy Radio, VAC, the Victorian AIDS Council, Midsummer, Queer Film Festival, Switchboard, Minus 18 and others, and most importantly, the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives as the base of our history, in a sense. We had a workshop, and what became clear is that the Pride Centre needs to start now. We already have a number of our major LGBTI organisations in Victoria who will be homeless potentially in 2017. And I've said, on behalf of the board, we take on ownership and we want to stand side by side with the organisations in trying to find solutions to that accommodation emergency.
And it's about ensuring that they're good to go when the centre's good to go.
Oh, yeah. So I've made it clear we're not going to be planning for the beautiful Pride Centre in 3 years' time in isolation from the immediate issues. Also, the Pride Centre will endeavour to be accessible, but the Pride Centre as a concept needs to be virtual, needs to be able to make connections with people in regional and rural Victoria and elsewhere. I mean, this Pride Centre is going to end up being the Pride and Joy, but hopefully nationally. The gay archives, if I can call them that, but the LGBTI archives, those archives, that is a nationally significant collection.
Oh, it's a collection. Treasure. Absolute treasure.
Absolute treasure, which should receive federal government funding, really, because of its national significance. And we would be arguing for that and advocating that, standing side by side with the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives in arguing their case for federal government funding. All of these things, important in terms of virtual, so social media, websites, website portal that people connect, can find services and that sort of thing, but also the immediate requirements. And then long term, what about a future where there are places around Victoria that are physical places that are the regional pride centres for people locally? So I think these concepts will change and evolve, but I can see if we use the expression temporal, meaning over time, that the Pride Centre will evolve over time. In terms of the planning for the physical place of the Pride Centre, the one to which the Victorian government has given a historical $15 million.
It's not a bad head start.
It is the single biggest contribution of any government in Australia to anything to do with LGBTI. Maybe HIV/AIDS spread over a period of time might have had that order of dollars, but this is a single huge grant.
We're not for a single deliverable.
Exactly. Yeah. So we haven't received that money as yet. There needs to be a business case which will be premised on site selection. An expression of interest has gone out from us last Friday to the Melbourne City Council and councils surrounding it within an 8-kilometre radius.
With the view of them pitching for it to be
exactly,
in their centre?
And right. Also right. Three universities, Victoria University, RMIT and Melbourne University, it's similarly gone to them. And state government land that's in any of their areas that might be suitable, there'll be discussions with the state by those councils or the unis about that land, and we're hopeful that that will lead to a competitive process and that 16th or 18th of December we will see then expressions of interest come in.
And wow, you haven't given them long.
There have been lots of discussions right, beforehand, okay, so yeah. Everyone's been prepped about okay. that. And they're now requesting more detailed briefings.
So when would you expect to have an announcement about a site?
Okay, so the process will be from here. There'll be the expressions of interest process. Come mid-December, there'll be responses. Then there will be an evaluation process. That evaluation process will lead to a shortlist. That shortlist will be discussed with the state government as a major funder, but also the Victorian AIDS Council as a potential major funder as well.
Also cashed up with $15 million in the bank.
And we're hopeful that, unless there's reasons why they think that sites are particularly difficult, that we will have a shortlist that then the Pride Centre Board will make a decision on.
$30 million is a nice deposit for a building, but probably not going to fit it out from the ground up, including even if you get the site from the state government. How much do you expect corporations and or community to give to that pool of funds?
So we will be getting a fundraising committee together. We're very mindful that others are also in the process of fundraising, such as marriage equality. We don't want to cut across those efforts. But we will be seeking corporate sponsorship, we'll be seeking foundation members, and we'll be raising funds. I'm sure that over time there'll be bequests that come to us as well. So we will have a significant fundraising arm as we really hit our straps. And as I said, I'm hopeful that we can make an approach to the federal government as well. So we've got a lot to do in a very short period of time.
Is there a target end date? Is there a time that you would like to see the doors open?
3 to 4 years from now, I think, to be realistic about that. I don't know whether the site that will be selected will have a building on it or will be a greenfield site. We're not sure whether there'd be major renovations or a significant build. There may be an opportunity for an iconic building with an architectural competition. All of that lies in front of us. It's very exciting. You know, there's some tremendous support that we're getting already, and I'm sure that that will build over time as well. Because we've moved on so much since 44 years ago. We've now reached this level in society where we have much more acceptance and we have people that are willing to contribute their efforts into building the Pride Centre. And the Pride Centre in all of its facets. Virtual Pride Centre will be endeavouring to get young professionals who are website builders and others who are experienced in social media to give insights onto the best way of reaching our community and our community talking with us. And with the Constitution, we've even been thought that through. So our directors are all skill-based. But we've seen the importance of being linked in with the community. We will have annual general meetings. There will be an opportunity for individual and organisational members. We will, though, as a board, say two of our members are leaving in, say, 3 years' time, and we're after this level of skill and this type of skill. So we'll endeavour to keep the skill-based approach, but a very, very strong link, engagement and ownership by our community.
Jude Munro, it's been a delight to have you join us today. So thank you so much and good luck with our very own Pride Centre.
Dean, thank you for your support.
Jude Munro there, the chair of Victoria's Pride Centre, joining us. That's it from me. You can follow the program on Twitter at The Informer Joy. You can follow me on Twitter at Dean Beck On Air. Until next time, keep well. Take care. Bye for now.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.